All right, welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Today, Ari Harrison, Director of IT at BAMCO. Welcome to the show. Pleasure to have you on. Thank you, sir. I have been perusing. Is that the right word? Am I doing this today? I'm on my second cup of coffee, and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm behind by about 10 cups. So we'll get there soon. You went to the University of Colorado Boulder. I went to CSU, so of course we're sworn enemies. If I had known that before, you came on the show, then I probably would have denied you. But you know, what are we going to do? Here you are. So you're probably smarter than me because it's harder to get into that school than it is to CSU. So you can, we'll give you that. Okay.
Sure.
The one thing I did notice that you've talked about recently is Microsoft's decision to uncouple Teams, and Microsoft really, they make licensing probably the easiest thing in the world. There's never any complications there. There's never any confusion. We all know how you should buy Microsoft. So anyways, let's just start with that, because I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that, what that means to everyone that maybe switched over or didn't last minute or is totally prepared for COVID. It was just the first thing that came to mind when I saw you mention Teams, and I'm a fan. I am a fan of global domination by Microsoft. I do believe that they will continue to dominate. They may even get into the vaccination space somehow in the future. That might happen too. So, anyways, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, every admin knows and uses Microsoft, right? And they allow you to, through a simple purchase, basically cover all of your IT needs 80% of the way. Right?
Are you paid by them?
No. Absolutely not.
No, we pay. Trust me, we pay.
Yeah, we pay.
Okay, go ahead.
The issue is they're so inflexible. Their licensing model is, I joke, you need a doctorate to understand it. And then once you get your doctorate in Microsoft, they change everything up. They change the names, the SKUs, the packaging. Mm. Yeah, it's really difficult to navigate. What packages you need, how much you should be spending, and now just decoupling another product makes it even more difficult to navigate.
I have a secret pro bono guy that works behind the scenes in our like secret behind the scenes department at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. His name is Steve Leach. And we like to, he is an ex-badged Microsoft guy. That's how we like to refer to him. But
blue badge, yep.
Yeah, he's the guy that just, like, whenever anyone's confused by all this stuff, we just bring him in and he'll talk to you for an hour about Microsoft licensing, and everyone will glaze over and he'll be really excited and thinks this is the awesomest thing in the world. But at least you'll leave with knowing how to buy all this junk. And then not junk. It's definitely not junk. But I remember, I guess Teams is kind of like the redheaded stepchild of Microsoft. But during COVID, we had a lot of people that had to last minute jump to Teams. And a lot of people made the wrong decision. And it was like, well, let's just voice enable Teams. That's just what you do. You just start paying $12 to get voice licensing for Teams. And then you pay another $12 for international licensing. And then, oh, wait a second, we need to buy this phone system SKU for another $8 because we're not on E5 yet.
Don't forget the conference bridging.
Oh, yes. Oh, I forgot.
It's another add-on. Yeah.
Because we're on Business 365, so we got to do it a different way there. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, depending on how that is. So now, I think I had one university that when I asked them, they're like, yeah, we just voice-enabled Teams for 60,000 users. I was like, what?
How'd
you
that go?
Paid? and it was at least, you know, the local calling and the phone system. So that's at least $20 times 60,000. And I was like, that was the wrong decision. And I will be quiet. We're going to sweep that under the rug. Don't tell anybody and move on.
Yeah.
So anywho, what does the new change mean? Maybe explain it briefly, give a little bit of education to the listeners out there. What does this mean? Why is this such a big deal? And it doesn't really matter because it's going to change anyway, 6 months from now or next March.
Yeah. So Microsoft got hit with an antitrust suit in Europe. And as a result of this antitrust suit, they've decided that they're going to uncouple Teams from their Microsoft 365 packaging. What this means is that the standalone product is going to end up being, I believe, $525 per user per month. So pretty substantial hit. Yeah, and it's just another thing for admins to administer on Microsoft.
Well, Okay, so maybe educate some other people, because antitrust suit, what were the details around that? What does that mean? Is that like anti-monopolization? What does it mean?
I think that the case was saying that they were forcing people into their solutions through bundling and preferential treatment, which we all know Microsoft would never do.
No. No one's ever thrown pie in Bill Gates' face.
My new favorite that they've done, I don't know if you've seen this, in Outlook, they've changed your default browser to open up into Edge. Regardless of what your default browser is set on your system, if you're using Outlook, any link you click by default will open in Edge unless you go into those advanced settings and change it back. So
they shouldn't do stuff like that. Someone had an idea there, and Microsoft inside the company itself is a very interesting company. I don't know if you know much about the internal, I want to call it politics, more campus. It's more of like a campus type feel. Do you know anyone that works at Microsoft? It's a very interesting company. It's pretty cool, actually.
I've worked with them a ton, and BAMCO actually does a ton of work with them.
Okay. So that should have been shot down. Someone should have been smart enough on whatever little internal team should have been like, you know, this is kind of an, you know, do you like when annoying stuff like that happens and you have to figure out where the setting is? It's like I shut off all of the, I don't know, I don't want my apps in the background using up internet on my iPhone or something like that. And, you know, then I go to need the app all of a sudden. There's like, no, you can't use it because you shut off the data, and I got to click through to settings. Like, there's some things that are just kind of annoying. Someone should have checked out. They should have, every company should have an annoying scale. Will this annoy our users? And it should be a yes or a no. And if the answer is yes, don't do it.
Right? Or consider heavily the impact.
Yeah. That's an annoying thing.
What's the justification? Yeah.
Yeah, you've already got the whole world, so you shouldn't do things that are annoying to people. But this antitrust thing, I kind of like that. So what you're telling me is that we can just buy Teams for $6.
Yeah, it's as a standalone, exactly. And it all goes back to COVID. Like you said, they were giving away all of these Teams exploratory licenses for free. They got the whole enterprise world addicted to this solution. Mm-hmm. And now they've just said...
I love how you said addicted. That might not be the correct word, but, you know, forced into using it.
Yeah, I mean...
Figuring it out.
When you're in that ecosystem, it's tough to branch out and use other solutions, right? Everything's built in. SharePoint's built in. Power BI. Everything's built into the solution. So to decouple just that and to say, hey, now you need to pay for this, it's an interesting move.
Hmm. So, well, they got forced to. So, although they didn't choose to do it, because if they chose to do it, then it might be different. Kind of like the we're going to a 12-month model now. You've got to renew for 1 year, or we're going to charge you an additional 20%. So it's just such an amazing company. When I really think about it, because we think back in time, I don't know how old you are. If you want to share, go ahead. But
35.
35.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, I'm 47. So that's old enough, I guess, to kind of remember back when they weren't a monopoly and this type of thing didn't exist. It's pretty crazy. Everyone in the world pretty much uses Microsoft, if not touches it in one way, shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah.
At least Word. So for sure. It's just amazing that just blows my mind. Just blows my mind. So anyway, no, we want more. It's not enough. It's not enough. We need to take over telecom too, which I wouldn't say they're a telecom company, nor should they be. However, they are. So yeah. How did you, talk to me a little bit. How big is your team? How many IT folks, what's it like over there?
So we have a large development presence in India, in a city called Dehradun, which is in northern India, with over 100 developers who work on our unified backend, which is our platform for our B2B and B2C stores. BAMCO does promotional products and awards programs for companies that want stores, web stores that are built into their websites, basically. And the unified backend team handles all of that. So large presence in northern India. We have 6 people on our help desk. And then we have our larger IT team from our parent company. We are a fully owned subsidiary of Superior Group of Companies. which is a NASDAQ traded corporation where we have dozens of folks on the IT team.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
So you are in a larger IT decision-making matrix of sorts.
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you get anything done that you want?
So I think process is key. When I first got to BAMCO, every single contract, every single service was getting sent over to me. And I quickly realized if we didn't have a process for security review, financial review, IT review, nothing was ever going to get done. Certainly, it wasn't going to get done the right way. Similarly, with our help desk, if I hand over something that doesn't have a well-documented process, we wouldn't be able to help our users. And so we really worked on our process. And then from that, from our process, we started to work on how do we automate these things? How do we bring in Intune and Autopilot has been a huge project that we've been working on to automate our deployments, our third-party application patching, our Windows patching, all of these things that we can automate. But first, we had to decide what was worthy of a process. How do we document this process? Do we need to put in services in order to get these processes under control? So that's been a lot of my focus.
Just out of curiosity, do you guys use, are you guys an enterprise level client with Microsoft?
The SGC is, yes. BAMCO is not.
And the reason why I was asking this is because you said everything was, let's just kind of rewind. First of all, what did that do for you, putting those processes in place, and how were you able to measure it?
So when I was onboarded, I noticed that there was a ton of friction in our onboarding process. And I really believe, like, if you have a good employee experience, you have a good customer experience. So that was something that I wanted to address off the bat. What Autopilot and Intune really allowed us to do, because BAMCO is a fully remote company, was send a laptop to someone, send them a welcome email, and have them working on day one, which sounds simple, but I'll tell you, it was a really, really, it was a sticking point and something that they were really upset with the previous provider about. So,
okay.
I sort
were
of
using an MSP or something to do that before, or?
Yeah, they were, Correct. They were using an MSP who was just imaging the computers and sending them out. And what ended up happening was, you know, it'd take a month to get a laptop provisioned because
we have
to. And then similarly, what Intune has allowed us to do is if there's any issue with the computer, we can send a remote wipe. We can re-image it remotely rather than having someone be offline for days, overnighting it to some, you know, to one of our facilities to take a look at and then overnighting it back. So there were.
Can we just complain about MSPs for a second? Can we just take a little side topic and can we just complain about? I don't
listen.
Understand.
I come from the world of MSP, so I sympathize for them.
No, I do, but what I don't understand is why couldn't they do that? Why did they not see that? So I think there's good MSPs. Obviously, there's, you know, it's kind of like the 80-20 rule, right?
Yep.
And so a couple of them are like, shame on you guys for not kicking them to the curb faster, right? Which they brought you in. So we can't blame that on you. We can say congratulations to whoever brought you in, right? Or whoever, whatever happened, right? And so my question is, it's the MSPs kind of get in this, the way that we, I think one guy described it with when my son did a lawn mowing, like letter that he sent out to everyone in the neighborhood because he wanted to mow people's lawns. And, you know, it was like, you know, you're already paying someone to mow your lawn. I'm not asking you to buy anything you don't already buy. I'm just asking you to just get me to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I remember the comments from everyone when we did this little post online years ago, one guy's comment was like, the 100th cut will be as good as the first cut. Meaning, do they earn their paycheck every single month or do they get into this kind of like, hey, we're just getting a check from these guys and we're not really earning our. There's no vibe with the team anymore. There's no vibe between the MSP and your internal team. And it's kind of just this like company that just becomes this like robotic thing to turn some a month for a computer. That's just ridiculous. I always say hours, not days, but that's days, not months.
Weeks, yeah.
Okay. So I guess my question is how did it get that bad?
I think it was allowed to get that bad. I think that MSPs are trying to templatize what they're doing to all of their clients. And sometimes that just does not work.
Yeah. Like menu of services, like check off your equipment, give us an inventory. Exactly. We'll charge you $9 for a laptop. We'll charge you this for that. Or okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So we're 1,000-person international company. The way that they were servicing us just was not working for the business.
So that's including you have to ship laptops to India.
So India is an interesting one. They're actually buckling down on technology imports. So things are very difficult there. It's that's a whole other discussion.
That sounds like fun. Well, no, we do run into that a lot too. Like when you're managing an international network, firewalls, for example, how do we get the firewall shipped from, Texas to Chile?
Yeah. And there's all sorts of local rules that apply to firewalls and security protocol. It's definitely a consideration. Yeah.
We have Jim, John, and Sarah each carry on a firewall and get on the plane. I'm serious.
And hope for the best. No, I hear you. It happens all the time. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, anywho.
Yeah. But just to take a step back, when I got there, I think it was really important to take a look strategically. What are the business needs and what are the solutions that we can put in place to solve these needs? Mm-hmm. And that was a glaring issue, onboarding and offboarding, glaring issue that we had to tackle. So we worked with our partners and we actually got a ton of funding from Microsoft to deploy Intune. Yeah. So the money's out there to do this stuff. The resources are out there. You just have to be your own advocate. I think they gave us like $30,000 towards this project.
Nice. Yeah. How do you get that done?
I think a lot of it was angling as a remote first company, perfect Intune, you know, perfect. So Intune was our perfect solution. It really was. And being able to demonstrate that value, to them, I think was, you know, invaluable.
So they're like, we'll credit you 30,000 or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the moral of the story there is, guys, always ask for more from the salespeople.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Pretty much what it is. There's a lot of money out there in the budget. There's a lot of this, it's the end of the quarter and we've got this left over and we want to give you this. And of all the companies that has a lot, Microsoft is. You just have to find the right internal team, which back to kind of that internal culture, because I have a very close friend that works at Microsoft and he got hired at Microsoft. And when they placed him in the company, they placed him in the wrong role. that he got hired for. He literally got to the company. He was like, this isn't what I was hired for. And they're like, oh, sorry. Here's what we want you to do. We want you to kind of just feel your way around the company, get to know everybody. Just take as long as you want. I think he took a year meeting with people on teams and getting to know people and finally finding the right team that he wanted to be on. And then he got placed.
Wow.
But when he got placed, he definitely, you know, works. But it's that big of a company. I mean, it's a massive, 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 you know, corporate company where they want the right people in the right seats on the bus. So if you got on the bus in the wrong seat, they're like, find the right seat. Like, it was so hard to get the job to begin with. There went through so much, you know, screening and interviews and everything that once you get there, they want you in the right spot, which is cool. I don't know how this correlates to whatever, but it shows that they, you can find, I guess my point is you can find the right people inside at Microsoft. And if there's money available to make the fit work and to make you guys a good case study, you guys were a great case study. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's sort of been, like emblematic of the way that we've worked with Microsoft. You know, you got to sort of get in there, find the right people, work with the right people, make your business case to them, you know, be visible to them. Otherwise you're going to be stuck with, you know, like Carvel support, pre-sales engineering. You got to sort of be your own advocate, with a company that large.
For the listeners out there listening to, in, I guess for the benefit of them growing their careers and stuff, I put out a meme like a couple weeks ago on LinkedIn that I found funny, which was, you know, new IT director coming in, looking at old IT directors, roadmap, and it was basically
I saw that it was okay empty.
You know what I mean, just like tumbleweeds flowing down the street. So to segue, I guess, is that a lot of people running, I mean, a lot of people are commenting, been there before, done that, and people that didn't comment sent me comments as well, or do comment, other people comment when they see something but don't want to put it out publicly. What's any tips or tricks of the trade on kind of like where to begin? Because you said processes were very important. Do you have kind of like an entry level process? Like, okay, let's go meet everybody. Let's talk with everyone. Let's see what everyone's concerns are. Let's see what everyone hates, what everyone loves. Do you have any type of process or way of going about that methodology?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say I was really lucky because at BAMCorp, president is extremely, extremely supportive. We have one-on-ones every week. Uh-huh. Where we're talking about business needs, we're talking about existing services, certainly doing that service discovery, figuring out what we actually had. That was huge for me. As far as processes go, my favorite saying is don't let perfect get in the way of good. Mm-hmm. So we just started working on things. We just started building out a knowledge base. I started figuring out what people were doing by building the knowledge base out. We started building our deployments. We started just working on different projects where I felt that there was a need. And then also through my one-on-ones with the president, discovered where IT can impact growth and revenue. And a lot of my projects have been around procurement processes, specifically around SaaS sprawl, huge problem in most businesses. And so I built out an entire process for review, for approvals, all of that around SaaS procurement.
Yes. I'm trying to remember who I was speaking with that said the average company has anywhere between 80 to 130 applications, which I found to be mind-blowing. I didn't think it was that high.
We're at 108 as of yesterday, I added.
So, managing all of this, it can't really be, shouldn't be, the metaphorical spreadsheet with contact numbers, and
it can't be
expiration dates.
It just can't be when you're talking about security, you know, the types of audits that you want from your vendors, when you're talking about your finance team's preferences for payment. I mean, there are so many variables when you start getting into the procurement process that you need assistance.
How many,
you're destined to fail.
How many shadow IT applications did you find?
Oh, man. So we're a Google Workspace shop. So it's pretty simple to just sign up with that Google SSO. And, you know, some of it wasn't even shadow IT per se. It was just, oh, that team's using this tool for outreach. Well, this team's using that tool, and that's just the way it's been, or it's that way because of a merger or acquisition that was done. So yeah, it never ends, really never ends.
Well, excellent. Is there ever a moment where you feel, well, you mentioned automation. So maybe,
yeah.
How much can you really automate? Is there ever a point where you feel like, well, I can at least put one leg up on the desk and sit back for a second and take a breather? Yeah. Is there like a sine curve to this or something?
I mean, my feeling is that if we can automate it, we should be automating it, especially if you have a team like ours. Like our help desk team is only a few people, right? So we do what we can. There's never a lack of work. Like, we're always running at full steam ahead, whether it's working on automation and processes strategically, that's where we want to be, or we're responding to putting out fires. I think that's just like the name of the game in IT. Unfortunately, you know, whatever's burning down gets our attention, and sometimes that strategic outlook gets put on the back burner. But I mean, yeah, we do the best we can with the tools we have, and I think having good automation tools really, really important.
Favorite top three vendors?
Ooh,
first ones that come to mind. Can't use Microsoft.
Can't use Google, huh?
Because we already know that you're a Google shop and a Microsoft shop, so that's kind of
sure. So lately, I've been loving Loom. Loom is a asynchronous communication tool, allows you to do like tutorials and walkthroughs. And it's great for us because we have that whole development team in India. Mm-hmm. So being able to have that asynchronous communication that works with our existing tool set, awesome.
So any kind of APIs with them or something? Or what? I mean, I know Loom. Loom's been around for a long time.
Yeah. So Loom's a great tool for us specifically. And no, we're Slack shop, so Slack's my number two. Their integration with Slack's really tight.
Nice. Didn't think you were going to say these two. Okay, you got a third one. You can pick a security product. You could pick, I mean, anything that comes to mind. I mean, security's got it. I mean, that's just a vast array of. The first thing that came to my mind was algae in the ocean. You know, like just so much stuff out there. Like, what do you do?
I mean, I could give you my least favorite very, very quickly.
Oh, let's do that. Oh, can we do that? Least favorite.
Well, oh, man. when my wife asks me what I want to eat for dinner, I always know what I don't want to eat for dinner. I'll go with Ninja One for my third. I love them. I love working with them. And I love the tool. Very familiar with all the key RMM players out there. And Ninja One has really allowed us to automate a ton. Integrate a ton. I love the tool set. Deployments are so simple.
I need to, I asked this because I need to start doing this all the time. And Doug and all my other hosts, if you listen to the show, and Greg, the Frenchman behind the scene, who's my basically head of production, we need to make asking the top three vendors like a number one thing, because maybe someday they'll pay us, you know? That would be good. We also need really good, I was thinking like a tank top that says hot nerd on the front. Maybe we should use you guys for that. We need some like giveaways, t-shirt giveaways or something.
We can talk about that. We can make it happen.
I'm sure. You. Okay. How? 35 years old. Let's see. We have to do what year are we in? 2023. So you were prior to Y2K.
I've been in this business.
24.
I've been in this business since I was 12. So going to Comdex CES every year, I was literally born into the business. So
yeah, but you were.
We can talk about it.
If I asked you what your first computer is, it's not going to be a Commodore.
486. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. 486. See, I had a 386. That was like my third computer or something. So
yeah.
486 was cool. It had enough memory to run Ultima 8 or something like that. Let's see. Bring me back in time. Like, what were you doing on this 486? Did we have internet? Did you have internet?
Playing Doom, low speed internet. Very, you know,
had the internet.
Minesweeper, yeah.
First email.
56K modem. Yeah.
What was your first email provider?
AOL.
See, remember we used to throw the discs like frisbees. You'd get it every month.
Oh, like, boy!
Wow.
House full of them.
They just, everyone had multiple AOL packets with those disks on. Okay.
I remember when we could first burn disks. That was a huge deal.
Mm, yes. Burning a DVD was an even bigger thing. Or yep. Dual disk. People used to have that whole server looking almost like a full server box where you could burn like 10 burn multiple. All at once. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
46D, slow internet. I don't know where we go from there. How did you get into this thing? This technology thing? It wasn't really a thing back then. I guess it kind of was.
So yeah, my dad is an electrical engineer, several dozen patents with Bell Labs. So that's really cool. was born into this. Started working for a system integrator when I was literally 12 or 13, building computers with all my friends. While everyone else was flipping burgers, we were putting together computers.
That's actually fun. I was flipping burgers and doing the computers on the back paying money to do that. What do you mean system integrator? Because that's such a broad term nowadays. What does that mean? Back system integrator today is a lot different than system integrator back then when you were 12. So I want to know what systems you were integrating.
Yeah, I mean, we were working for an IT consulting company, eventually turned into an MSP like the rest of them. Eventually in high school, I started going to clients, installing computers, working a little bit on servers, you know, home lab with my own server, went to college, go Buffs, graduated, and then started working for MSP on the help desk.
I had net zero when I was at CSU. That was my internet provider. Net zero, CSU. No, I think maybe my senior year, I wrote one paper where I had to cite the internet. Maybe. The rest of that was bibliographies that were all, you know, card catalogs and libraries and the Dewey Decimal System. If I asked my kids how to use a card catalog at the library, I don't know what they would, I don't even know if that even exists. I mean, it must still exist. They must still have the big card catalog thing.
Check it out on ChatGPT and get an answer for you.
True.
Dewey Decimal System exists anymore. Or if there's an updated system, if it does though.
Yes. It's a good question. We should ask that one.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
Do you subscribe to any conspiracy theories?
I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy.
So we landed on the moon, 100%, guaranteed, definitely walked on the moon.
I think we walked on the moon.
That's crazy. Have you looked at the moon lately? It's 220,000 miles away. I was the guy that was like, no, anyone that ever says that is an absolute idiot. You're totally crazy for thinking that we never walked on the moon. And then for some reason, one day I was like, why do people really think that? I was like, I should be a little bit more open-minded. I should at least give it, you know, the benefit of the doubt. I went down that dark hole. And if you read like some real books on it, you'll be like, no, absolutely no way. No chance. No way at all. I honestly feel like if you put a gun to my head right now and I would be like, oh, I really don't want to say, I really don't want
to. So gun to your head, you're saying no?
I'm saying no, we didn't. And I think there's some simple arguments, and then there's like the real complicated arguments where you talk about like, you know, what type of rocket fuel and the cooling powers and like the 1 million, you know, pounds or tons of lift that was capable. And then you start talking about latency and phone calls to the moon, to a little umbrella that sits on the moon, and test runs and like chances of survival and like all the things that are absolutely insane. Compute power, 1969.
No compute power, that much.
We can agree on. And then why have we never gone back? I feel like we should have colonies on the moon, like walking around. We should definitely have some kind of test station and like, you know, and why all the like, why is every picture taken of the Earth, not a picture of the Earth? It's a digital, you know, NASA, like this is what it would look like. So a lot of different things. And not just the old school stuff, like, oh, the shadow and the flag.
The flag, yeah, the flag's the big one.
No, I'm talking about the capsule detaching and re-entering the Earth's atmosphere at 33,000 feet per second. That's the speed they say it was entering at. 33,000 feet per second. I don't know however many times faster that is in the fastest plane that's made by man right now, but it's a lot faster. It's like 9 football fields per second or something insane. Might even be 100. No, I think it's 109 football fields per second. Is that right? 33,000, whatever that math is. That's one that I and everyone laughs at me. I've had a few guys that I was going to have on the show from NASA, and they're like, I am not an apologist. I will not be on your show.
I don't know. I'm not naturally very like skeptical of things like that, especially when
neither am I. I was just being open-minded. I just,
for sure.
And when you study the math and everything and you start to look at it, it's just like a little side hobby of mine. It's really just, it's just something that, I don't know, triggered me all of a sudden. I don't know how I got into it, because I used to think it was crazy. And I used to laugh at the Dumb and Dumber where he'd be like, we landed on the moon. So I just have to put that out there so everyone will get angry and maybe there'll be a real like physicist out there that doesn't believe we landed on the moon and wants to be on the show. That would be great.
Put in the comment section, right?
Or there's a whistleblower. Any whistleblowers out there, let me know. And then Phil disappears off the face of the earth. I'm not suicidal, so if I disappear, everyone can question that.
Oh, man.
What's the end game for IT people? First of all, do you have mentors and everything? Because IT leadership, IT in general, has been something that has, it's new. It's somewhat new. Technology really isn't that old. You know, because 1969, we landed on the moon, but we didn't have internet, really. We might have had ARPANET. I think we had ARPANET for a year, maybe 2 years into ARPANET. So what do you foresee the future? What do you see happening in the future? I mean, what's the end game for an IT director? Do you retire in Costa Rica? Do you just keep going until
far away from broadband?
Yeah. What is it? You know, like, are you in a, what do they call those? A ute? Is it a ute? Is that right? Yeah. What are those like styrofoam things and off the grid, you know, completely living off the grid? Thank you. Yeah. I'm like a ute. I sound like I hope I didn't trigger anyone there. What do you mean? It's a yurt. What's the end game?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big question, right? So I came from an MSP and I sort of proved to myself that I could do the MSP thing and, mm-hmm. I loved working for the MSP.
They used you as child labor, so that was good for them.
Exactly.
12 years old. They're like, these kids know more about computers than all the other guys. Have them.
They're in. Like, his hands are so dexterous. They can fit into get all those motherboard
plugs. He loves
plugs.
Doing it. And he loves doing this. It's like, you know, let the kid play.
Yeah. Okay. No, destroying hardware was always fun too. I mean, I think I'm in a really good place right now. I sort of did the MSP thing. I had the clients complaining to me all the time. And now I sort of feel like I'm finding my groove internally. When I set policies, there's no one from in the business coming back and giving me pushback on them. I think what you said about mentoring and having a mentor, yes, I have a mentor. I think it's really important. My mentor sort of echoed this advice when I was at the crossroad in my career. Basically, what happened was we sold the MSP, and I was presented with the decision to join the MSP that we sold to, or to pursue this other opportunity as an IT director. And I sort of said, hey, you know, I've done the MSP thing. I can always go back into that world. The door is always opened. Let me see what it's like in the world of internal IT. It's definitely been different. Definitely a change, but I think it's all been for the positive.
Why not have something be more rewarding? Why not have... like you said, when you make a roadmap or make policies, that policy is in alignment with everybody.
Yeah.
Because if you do,
and I really get like the alignment from executives, and we're able to drive change in a way we could just never do it through, you know, our QBRs with our clients as an MSP.
Yeah, you can't do it because there's going to be just the nature of the model itself is going to be misalignment, because there's not a one size fits all, unless they're able to say, let's make policies and procedures that are directly in alignment with your company. But I think that's hard to do as an MSP, because they themselves have to automate. They themselves have to be more nimble, unless they really want to charge a lot more. And then the question is going to be like, well, do we want to be charged a lot more by an MSP, or do we want to bring an internal guy in that can run the whole program for us? And the same thing happened to me. I was in the MSP small business world, and I had a personal mentor that said, well, who do you really like working with? And I was like, well, I started thinking of all the people that I had a lot of fun with, and they were all like IT directors and teams and help desk teams at mid-market companies that were like, you know, I don't know, 200 to 10,000 end users or something like that, because they know what an IP address is. And there's like a whole goal and something to achieve and move something forward versus, you know, menu of services and kind of one size fits all and you know that type of thing.
I mean, here's the thing I'll say, the experience that the MSP brought to me was incredible. You learn through a fire hose. You see so many different environments, right?
Yeah, you learn who you love working with, who you don't like working with.
Yeah.
You learn what teams jive and what teams don't jive. Yeah, you learn all of it. You get a very broad what you need if you're going to go to that.
Exactly. But now being able to sort of back up and look at things strategically, it's been great. Really, it's been great. And my mentor was instrumental. My mentor is a serial entrepreneur who's extremely successful, multiple exits to companies like Salesforce, Procter & Gamble. I mean, really successful guy. And he's like, listen, even if you're leaving money on the table here, you got to see what you can do. He's like, I talk to people every day working at Facebook and Google who are going to startups, right, with a lot bigger stakes. And I always tell them to go explore and see what it's like out there with a startup or a different opportunity. Just to, you know, those opportunities that you had are still going to be there when you're done. So I'm really glad I made the jump.
Nice. And if you're happy and somewhat free, there's nothing, no amount of money can really buy that. Like, honestly, if someone came to me and said, Phil, we need 100%. You to come in. Phil, we need you to come in and take over this role. We're going to give you $10 million a year. The answer 100%, absolutely, without a doubt, would be no.
Yeah.
$10 million a year. 10, $20 million a year. $100 million a year. I don't care. $1 billion a year, I might think about that.
We're talking about it. Yeah, we have a conversation. Right,
$1 billion a year. I'm like, well, maybe we can sacrifice for a little while. How long do I have to sign on for? but it's really once you get to a certain point, there's not, you know, is there anything that you're really passionate about that would be very helpful to some of the listeners? Maybe some of the feedback you've had from mentors in the past, things that are very unique to you, or something that, you know, would be very valuable to share that isn't just white noise?
I mean, I'll tell you my outlook on technology, and I think it's simple, but it's something that gets missed a lot. My outlook is that we should use technology to make people's lives simpler, to make their jobs simpler. I think a lot of people in IT get stuck in making things more complicated, actually. So my whole outlook is use technology and use it to make your life simpler and better.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's what, that's pretty much like what Apple is claims to do, correct?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Let's make like one button. I remember when I first saw the iPhone, I was like, one button. I was like, how? That doesn't make any sense to me. I remember just thinking like, no way. Because I had a BlackBerry.
Bombers, like, it doesn't have a keyboard. What are they thinking?
Yeah, I had a BlackBerry. Actually, I had two BlackBerries.
I had a Windows phone, actually. So,
okay, yeah. I was like, no buttons, like no physical buttons. I remember just like, nah, no way. These BlackBerry is going to smoke them.
I was at CES with my dad, and he called me over and showed me the keynote and was like, what do you think? And I'm like, come on, this is nothing.
No, I got my hard bulletproof plastic BlackBerry on the belt.
20 years later.
I was that guy. Yeah. I mean, there was another IT manager that he didn't have the best choice of language. He's like, oh, you're an I douche now. He's like, going on one of those guys. Never. I wonder if he has an iPhone now. So yes, this has been a pleasure having you on the show. I don't know, any final thoughts, words of wisdom?
Thanks for having me. I think it was a lot of fun. Really great.
Excellent, sir. And well, thank you for being on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. And please, follow. Get anyone out there listening, please refer our show to people. We've grown. We've had significant growth over the last year. We went from ranked 24th to 11th. Anyone out there, share the show with all the listeners. And, Loom, Slack, or Ninja. Was it Ninja One?
Ninja One, yeah.
Ninja One, we will accept your donations for spots to advertise on the show.